Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Killen Kerwin and Gary Spain. This week on the show, we have part two of our journey through some famous European Cup stroke Champions League nights for League of Ireland clubs. Gary will be taking us through some of the great performances, wins and stories that have seen the League of Ireland in European competition, so stick with us for that. Don't forget to share the show on your social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football. Turn on notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so that you can get notified straight away when a new episode drops, plus some bonus clips as well. So let's get down to more European adventures.
We move on to Dundalk against Linfield. Am I right in saying that this Dundalk side goes further than anybody else before?
Yeah, so they became the first League of Ireland side to actually go through two rounds. So we've talked, and you talked about the wait to win a round. We had to go to 1970. Second time was 1978. I should probably mention, in case someone wants to be really pedantic, in 1974, Cork Celtic got through a round because they got a walkover against Ammonia because of the troubles in Cyprus at the time. But they didn't actually beat Ammonia, so they got a walkover and played in the second round against Ararat, where they were well beaten. So Dundalk were the first team to actually win through two rounds. And, well, that's only the half of it in the whole, the controversy,
Let's get into it. So first match, Dundalk against Linfield. What's happening?
So I suppose to put that in perspective, Dundalk, they'd won the double in 1978-79. They were a top side. They'd won the cup, as those of us in Limerick will painfully remember, in 1977. And they'd won the league. They'd won the league in 76. So they were Jim McLaughlin's Dundalk.
Yeah.
They were a really top side. Linfield in 1979 were the kingpins of the Irish League. They were a very strong side. They won a lot of leagues under Roy Coyle at the time. So it was quite a tie. And then, to put this in perspective, in the summer of 1979, you had the murder of Lord Mountbatten in Sligo, and you had a number of British soldiers were murdered in Warren Point. I think it was 20 in total. So the tensions were incredibly high on the island. You had Dundalk and Linfield drew each other in a preliminary round in the European Cup. So in those days, you had just over 32 teams. So you had maybe two or four teams were playing a preliminary round, and Dundalk and Linfield were drawn out to play each other in late August, early September 1979. So another All-Ireland clash, huge implications. And I mean, Dundalk is, an hour from Belfast? Mm-hmm. There was a huge crowd packed into Oriel Park for the first leg. And unfortunately, I mean, you can only describe it as riots. It was a night of shame. It was front page news. The guards had actually driven a lot of fans out of the ground by the time the second half was going on. But it was a night of shame. It was a night of a lot of fans getting injured, a lot of trouble, stones, everything being thrown. On the pitch, it finished as a one-all draw. Warren Feeney gave Linfield the lead just after half-time. Liam Devine grabbed an equaliser for Dundalk, 10 minutes to go. But, I mean, it was all the off-the-field stuff that made all the headlines, made all the antics. There was talk. There was even talk of Dundalk withdrawing and not playing the second leg and everything. In the end, UEFA stepped in and decided the second leg couldn't happen in Belfast. It had to be played in Haarlem in the Netherlands a week later. So that would have added to the costs and everything. And obviously it was a huge disadvantage to Linfield. Instead of having the second leg at Windsor Park with their one-all draw and their away goals, they had to travel to the Netherlands.
It seems like a strange decision to put it that far away. I understand the safety concerns, but, you know, it could have been maybe somewhere in England, Scotland, I mean, Wales, I mean, where, like, I'm only saying that, like, going to the Netherlands seems like a very, very far kind of push to put it.
Yeah, and I mean, particularly in those days, I mean, it was flights were expensive, so traveling by ferry was a lot more common. Certainly if you were trying to go to away matches and with the cost involved. So, yeah, but I think by playing it in the Netherlands at a few days' notice, it was going to be virtually impossible for any fans, and certainly it was one sure way of avoiding trouble.
True, yeah.
I think there were 1,500, 2,000 people at the game, but it was all locals. Yeah.
So how did that second leg turn out?
Well, it was a cracking game. Cathal Mochean gave Dundalk an early lead. They were well on top in the first half, but Linfield came right back in the second half. They got a penalty, and Warren Feeney, who scored in the first leg, missed the penalty. Linfield hit the post. I think it was Warren Feeney again. They came really close to equalising, but late in the game, a couple of minutes to go, Cathal Mochean made it 2-0, and Dundalk had won the tie and gone through 3-1 in aggregate. Huge win for Dundalk, and well, maybe people can focus more on the football than on the off the field antics. You know.
Yeah, well, I suppose when that happened, when the tie went to the Netherlands, that's essentially what happened, wasn't it? You got a cracking tie and football was played.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure there are those in Belfast lamenting the fact they lost home advantage, and it might have been different had the second leg been at Windsor Park. But I mean, it was a great Linfield team, but it was also a really great Dundalk side. And ultimately, they prevailed in Harlem.
You end up facing Hibs then.
Well, Hibs of Malta. So it was Hibs of Malta, champions, in the first round. So and I mean, this was one that Dundalk would have been hot favourites to win, and they did, well, the first leg in Oriel Park, they won comfortably 2-0. Hilary Carlisle, Liam Devine. The newspaper reports really saying they should have won by 4. Missed a load of chances. Had a 15-1 corner count. But it was generally felt the clean sheet, 2-0, it was going to be enough to put Dundalk through. But it didn't quite work out like that. So it was quite a different story when they went to Malta and the heat. So, and I think it's important to point out as well, in those days in Malta and Cyprus, there was very little grass on the pitch. I mean, even in 1980, the national team went to Cyprus, played on sand. This pitch in Malta was basically white sand. It was also incredibly hot, and the Dundalk players actually put boot polish and mascara on them to ward off the heat. So it must have been quite a sight. I struggle to find any photographs, but
I don't think you will either, not these days.
Yeah, and I mean, these days it might be misconstrued or something, yeah, if you absolutely put boot polish all over your face. But I mean, this was just to ward off the heat. And it was a very different tie. I mean, the corner count this time was 13-2 in Hibs' favour. They missed quite a few chances. They got the only goal midway through the second half. But Dundalk were very relieved to hear the final whistle and to scrape through 2-1 in aggregate. And probably would have been seen as a disappointment not that they got through, but they didn't make it more comfortable. I know Waterford hammered Hibs and Malta the following year in the Cup Winners' Cup. But our league would have been perceived at the time as being levels above the Maltese league. But I think given they were playing on sand, given the heat, it was just a case of getting the job done and getting through to the next round. And, well, what a draw they got.
Absolutely, yeah, massive draw. Tell us about this, because they get Celtic, which in any neck of the woods, it doesn't matter what club you are, if you draw Celtic, it's going to draw a crowd here.
Yeah, a huge draw. And interestingly, now I don't know the either Dundalk accepted the draw. They were drawn away first, so either they accepted to play away first, or they didn't ask, or they asked to switch to tie, and Celtic didn't agree. So I don't know in this case. But Dundalk did play in Celtic Park, which could have been a bit of a risk, but boy, did it seemed to pay off. I mean, they went 2 down in the first half, but Cathal Mucian pulled the goal back. They went 3-1 down in the first half. And I actually still remember the BBC 1500 meters long wave, because I used to listen to that in the 70s as a kid. And they would give updates. So I can't remember what game was on commentary, but they said, and there's been another goal at Celtic Park, that must make it 4-1. No, give me that again. So what was that? Oh, it's 3-2. Dundalk have scored. And Mick Lawler had pulled one back for Dundalk on 68 minutes to make it 3-2. And actually, Liam Devine had a great chance 9 minutes from the end to equalise. But so Celtic won 3-2. And with the away goals rule in those days, this tie was really in the balance. Mm. And suddenly, I mean, Celtic were always going to be a huge draw in Oriel Park. But suddenly this was game on. And I know Enda McGuill was quoted afterwards as saying he doesn't know how they're going to cope with the crowd and the number of people that want tickets for this game. So they packed 20,000 people into Oriel Park, and I don't know how they did it.
But, magic, by the 20,000
people. And it's one of the stories in Dundalk folklore and history of what might have been, because the game finished 0-0, but a Cathal Mucian cross, Tommy McConville was inches away from scoring. And maybe if it was a striker, not the Tommy up from the back, brilliant defender, but didn't score too many goals. But he was inches away late in the game from scoring the goal that would have put Dundalk through an away goals rule, but it wasn't to be. And Celtic went through 3-2 in aggregate. And the reward for Celtic in the quarterfinals was a game against Real Madrid. So what a tie that would have been for Dundalk.
Absolutely, yeah. But it's a great segue into our next one. Limerick are the champions, and they do get the glamour tie. Perhaps one of the greatest glamour ties in League of Ireland history in the Europe.
Yeah, well, it was, but
not the result.
It turned out to be a financial disaster, because, yeah. I mean, we talked about Waterford getting huge crowds in Lansdowne Road for Manchester United, for Celtic, even for the likes of Galatasaray and Wichpest Doce. They brought them to Lansdowne Road. But Limerick made the fateful decision in 1980 to bring Real Madrid to, and I know, let's say, part of the talk was that in those days, Thomond Park had a very low, small wall. You could easily, people were sitting on it, you could easily just jump over it. I was only a kid at the time, but I was easily able to get over it. But and UEFA had big fines for pitch invasions, and the concern was, if there was a pitch invasion, the club would face a big fine. Mm. So they made the decision to go to Lansdowne Road. In 1980s Ireland, Lansdowne Road didn't have floodlights either, which was a factor. In 1980, unemployment was high, money was tight, and the Limerick fans, many decided to boycott the game as well in protest at the game being moved to Dublin. The Dublin football public were not enamoured with Real Madrid. They weren't on our TV screens. They didn't know the names, apart from Laurie Cunningham, who had been with West Brom. There weren't that many big names in... There were huge names from a world football perspective, but the Real Madrid players were not the household names they'd be today. And unfortunately, we got about 5,000 people at the game. But those that were there witnessed an incredible game. Des Kennedy put Limerick ahead in 55 minutes. I should mention Johnny Matthews had a goal very dubiously chalked off for offside. It looked onside to nearly everybody in the first half. He had scored against Man United and Celtic. He almost scored against Real Madrid. Again, dubious penalty 15 minutes from time. It got Real Madrid level and they got a late winner. It's a case of what might have been for Limerick, and went to the Bernabeu, were beaten 5-1. Des Kennedy scored again, scored home and away against Real Madrid. So I suppose in the end it wasn't one that was that close, but it's a huge draw for Limerick, a huge game, but unfortunately one that the club ended up losing a lot of money on.
Wow. I know when we talked to Owen Hand, of course, who was the... who was there at the time, he was talking about Des Kennedy, and every time they do kind of after dinner speaking or they do events or whatever, him and the lads kind of jokingly, they all kind of roll their eyes when they see Des Kennedy is going to be there too, because they all go, Jesus, oh, we're going to have to listen about these goals again against Real Madrid all over again.
Yeah,
but it's
and there's it actually
but what a wonderful legacy to have. I know they lost, but like just to be at that level and score against Real Madrid twice in two successive rounds, which I don't think anybody else had done or did in that championship tournament either, did they?
Yeah, I mean, there is a story which quite the facts quite don't add up on this, right? But the claim, and I've heard it so many times, was Des scored home and away against Real Madrid. The claim is they didn't concede another goal until Alan Kennedy got the winner for Liverpool in the final. Liverpool beat them 1-0. Now, it's not quite true, because they played Internazionale in the semi-finals and they did score a goal as well. I can't remember who scored for Inter. So they actually conceded 4 goals in that European Cup campaign. But Des still got half of them. But they weren't all scored by a Kennedy. So
bursting the Des Kennedy bubble there.
He still scored home and away. And he was the only one to score in the Bernabeu against them in that campaign. So true, it's
brilliant. A great legacy to have. And we're up next for Athlone. Tell us, who are they playing?
So this is one that, looking back, and again, you need to put this in context. This will be seen, it was seen at the time as a little bit of a disappointment, but also quite a controversial one. So Athlone Town won the league in 1981, their first ever League of Ireland title, a crack Athlone Town side. They drew KB from Copenhagen, the Danish champions. Now, back in those days, I suppose, our champions, our top clubs, would have seen themselves maybe on a par, maybe slightly better than the likes of the Norwegian, Danish champions. I mean, Athlone had put out Vålerenga in the European Cup, UEFA Cup in 1975. Bose had put out Esbjerg, if I remember rightly, Danish side, Vålerenga or Norwegian, obviously. So Athlone were expected to probably win this tie. They went to Copenhagen. They drew 1-1. Another O'Connor, Michael O'Connor, another brother, a very talented player himself. Mickey O'Connor put Athlone 1 up after 4 minutes. The Danes equalised on 16, and it finished 1-1 and was a good result, an away goal, and it was all set up for the return leg at St. Mel's Park. And this is where, I suppose, the refereeing, the controversy, everything comes in. Basically, Athlone were complaining afterwards, and the newspaper reports seemed to back it up, of 3 refereeing errors. They had a goal disallowed that shouldn't have been disallowed. They should have had a penalty, and the second KB goal was offside. But on the game itself, KB led 2-0. Eugene Pooch Davis sadly passed away there recently. He got 2 back. It finished 2-2. Athlone went out on the away goals rule and lamenting what might have been. But at the time, it was seen as a disappointment. I suppose if you're looking at the likes of the Danish champions now, you see FC Copenhagen putting 5 past Malmo. I mean, I wouldn't give our champions a hope in hell against the Danish champions these days. But back in those times, they were expected to progress, or it was a slight shock or a disappointment that Athlone couldn't pull that off.
Mm. A lesson in there somewhere about developing your domestic soccer and your domestic league and bringing it forward to deeply competitive as well in the modern era.
Incredible. If you actually seen what Danish football, Norwegian football, Scandinavian football, the Swedish leagues, they have come on at incredible levels. I mean, they are light years above what they used to be, and it's fantastic to see. Attendances are way up as well, and it is the model for the League of Ireland. It is where we need to go. And I mean, they've gone from crowds of 4,000 and 5,000 up to 14,000, 15,000, 20,000. Right. You know, it's you've had some cracking Scandinavian derbies in Europe as well. I mean, I talked about Copenhagen and Malmo. There's a few others ongoing, and I mean, but those leagues are the model, and that's where we need to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely right. I remember when when Norway beat England, the great commentary speech at the end of that about all the great famous English people of history, etc. You got a hell of a beating, etc. And they went from that, in I suppose, to being really kind of considered, you know, good footballers in general, consistently across the board as well. So a great model for Irish football. I suppose we're gonna move on now to our next one. You've got Rovers here. Is it Sligo or Shamrock?
Oh, it's Shamrock Rovers. It's the 1984. I didn't mention Sligo Rovers, Red Star Belgrade in 77. It's a famous European tie for Sligo Rovers, but they were well beaten over in both legs. But in 1984, Shamrock Rovers, the great Jim McLaughlin Shamrock Rovers, the first of the four in a row, and it was another All Ireland tie. Rovers and Linfield, still Roy Coyle's Linfield, a really talented Linfield side. And I suppose just to give this a little bit of context, the first leg was played in Belfast the night after Bowes played Rangers. I will go on and talk about Bowes Rangers in Dalymount Park, but let's just say there was a lot of trouble. There was riots. It was very unsavoury game. So first leg in Windsor Park, it was quite a bad game. It was a boring 0-0 draw. Gibson was sent off for Linfield early in the second half, but Rovers seemed quite content to play out a scoreless draw. They didn't try to win the match on the night, which against 10 men ultimately proved to be a major mistake. But I suppose if you look back in those days, home advantage was considered, and it was a much bigger thing maybe than even it was today. And certainly coming back to Dublin with a 0-0 draw, did a bit in your hand off for that going up there. It was a great result, but you have to look back in hindsight and think maybe playing 10 men in the second half, they could have gone for it and got a goal and maybe killed off the tie. But anyway, it finished 0-0 in Belfast. There were a lot of restrictions on the game in Dublin then, because of all the trouble at Bowes Rangers. The game was moved to an afternoon kickoff. There were meant to be no away fans, but a few hundred got in. My father drove up with me from Limerick, and we got in. We didn't have tickets, but we would have known, I mean, the people involved in Rovers at the time, but managed to get in the end.
Those loose gates.
So the crowd was actually quite small. There was only a couple of thousand people at it compared to what they could have got had they played under lights on a Wednesday night. A few hundred away fans on the old terrace behind the goal at the far end in Milltown. And my memory of it is being a cracking European tie and being a brilliant game. It was right in the balance. So it had been 0-0 from the first leg. David Jeffrey, the legendary manager for Linfield, but he was also a legendary player. And back in the days when he had a big mop of blonde hair, he put Linfield ahead after half an hour from a corner. And Rovers came roaring back. Neville Seaman had a great game. He was taken off. He was injured. Rovers equalised through Peter Eccles on the hour. And they had chances. They pounded the goal in the last half an hour to actually win the tie, to win it on the day. But Linfield held on, finished 1-1. And Rovers went out and Linfield went through on the away goals rule. So a first win for the Irish League in the third All-Ireland European Cup clash as well.
Bring back away goals. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to say any more, but I do love the old away goals. They really changed ties. We're going to go now to Cork. Am I going to pronounce this right? Is the next question? Cowbran.
I think it's pronounced Cumbran, but it's my Welsh pronunciation. And I mean, people might actually suggest we're jumping forward 9 years and we're glossing over some dark days. The 80s and the 90s, there weren't too many good days in Europe. So we jump forward to 1993 and the Cork City team that won the league that year. And again, it's one, we'll talk about it, but it wasn't exactly a vintage performance. I mean, the Welsh team would have been amateur part-time at the time. Cork City would have been huge favourites for the game. They drew the Welsh champions, and they ended up 3-0 down at half-time in an absolute shock in the first leg. They did pull it back a bit. John Caulfield and Tony Buckley, though Dave Barry had gone off injured, so did impact on, he was their, one of their key players at the time. John Caulfield got a goal back. Tony Buckley, who actually came on for Dave Barry, got the second one. They lost 3-2 on the night. It was still an embarrassing result, considered a poor performance. But having got the two goals back, having got the two away goals, they would have been hot favourites to go through. It did work out like that in the end, but not as easy as expected. And I suppose just one thing that struck me, and if you look back at the power and the strength of that Cork City team and the strikers they had and the names I'm talking about, they had John Caulfield and Pat Morley, who I think are joint top all-time goal scorers for Cork City.
Legends.
Fantastic player, legends, and you wouldn't even get into an argument which of them was the better one. Also, in that attack, you had Johnny Glynn, who'd won up with Galway, top striker, really scored so many goals. And you had Tommy Gaynor, who's a Limerick star, and he'd won a League Cup with Nottingham Forest and played really well in the final only a couple of years earlier. So the firepower of Tommy Gaynor, Johnny Glynn, John Caulfield and Pat Morley in your team. And but they needed them all, because Tommy Gaynor was dazzling them in Turner's Cross. But Cork City went to goal down in the home leg and really struggled before Pat Morley equalised with 17 minutes to go. And just when it looked like all was lost, Johnny Glynn popped up to snatch a late winner and put Cork true on the away goals rule. So there were a lot of, I remember there were a lot of recriminations around that. They were saying it wasn't good enough, and it certainly wouldn't be talked about as one of the great wins, but they did get the job done and get over the line in the end.
Yeah, eventually, but made hard work of it by the sounds of it. But yeah, some phenomenal goal scoring talent in there. So if we move on then, we'll start talking about Pats against Celtic.
You would just mention the return, the second round then. So
Cork City did go through.
They drew Galatasaray in the next round, and they did. I mean, there was a lot of talk. I mean, Galatasaray ended up actually putting out Manchester United subsequently.
Even though
Cork were beaten home and away, both legs were very tight. First leg in Bishopstown, Galatasaray got a late winner to win 1-0. Cork were considered the better team by many people who were there. I think I actually wasn't at the game. My father was down at it, though. And in the return, Dave Barry scored. They were actually the first Irish team to play in the Ali Sami Yen, and Welcome to Hell, as the banner was known at the time. But City just lost 2-1. They played really well again. So even though they lost home and away, they'd only beaten 3-1 in aggregate. And I will play with people with, say, Waterford. Waterford did not. When Galatasaray played Waterford, they actually played the game in the Besiktas Stadium for whatever reason. So Cork City were the only Irish team actually to go to the Ali Sami Yen and Welcome to Hell, etc. Galatasaray subsequently beat Manchester United, Alex Ferguson's Manchester United. And
And I remember watching that Manchester United game as well, and I believe they got bricks thrown at the bus and there was all sorts
drawn
away in Turkey is like, it's going to be a nightmare.
Turkey in those days wasn't for the faint hearted. I mean, my only game, I was in the Ali Sami Yen a couple of years earlier for an under 21 game, which was a dead rubber. We were bottom of Turkey were bottom. We were second bottom of the group. And they beat us 2-1 with a last minute winner to finish second bottom. Nothing at stake. Played on a Tuesday afternoon. The senior game was the following day. 18 or 20,000 people in the stadium went absolutely nuts. They were throwing bricks at the Irish fans. Only a handful of Irish fans there. Throwing bricks at the Irish fans. Just going absolutely nuts. It was not much of a ground to look at, but it was very atmospheric, and it certainly had a reputation of being one passionate, not for the faint-hearted.
Passionate fans.
Yes, very passionate fans.
So we'll move on to Pats v Celtic then. Again, as we mentioned before, any Irish team that draws Celtic is gonna get the headlines.
Yeah, and I mean, Pats were drawn against Celtic. Again, they went to Celtic Park first. And again, they pulled off a famous result. And they actually, they drew 0-0. And I think Trevor Molloy had a great chance to win it late on. I think it was him that shaved the post late on. And fantastic result, brilliant performance. Unfortunately, at the return at Talca Park, Celtic scored a couple of quick early goals and put the tie to bed. But it was a brilliant away performance by Pats, and quite a feather in their cap to draw with Celtic in those days.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You've put down here that you're going to talk about shells and bows against Bate in the, I presume, the same campaign.
Yeah, so we'll probably move on to talk about into the noughties, and I suppose with the changing face in Europe, it did become more common for our sides to go through. So I mean, there were a lot of dark days in the 80s and 90s, a few hammerings. I mean, Pats, after drawing with Celtic, the Zimbru put 5 past them home and away, 10-0 in aggregate, you know. So, but in 2000, Shells actually beat the Macedonian champion Slogo Yugo Magnet before losing out to Rosenborg. But still quite an achievement. Bose in 2003, they beat Bate Borisov. They went to Borisov, lost 1-0, brought them back to Dalymount. Stephen Caffrey, our own Bobby Ryan from Limerick, and Ben Crowe bagged the goals. The 3-0 wins, seriously impressive. So it was a couple of good wins, but more, I think it's 2004 that we really talk about really, really making an impact, and arguably one of the greatest results of all time for an Irish side. I know any Dundalk fan will not agree with me on this one, but I think any Shells fan would certainly be making this case. So and maybe some of these get forgotten about, but in 2004, very talented Shells team, champions. They drew the Icelandic champions KR Reykjavik. They would have been favourites. Went to Iceland. We're actually 2-0 down with 7 minutes to go. It's actually quite forgotten about. Shelburne were 2-0 down in Iceland. Alan Moore got a goal back. A late Sigurdsson own goal made it 2-2. And with the two away goals, Shells were in good form coming back to Talca. It's still, and I mean, I was at the game. I was obviously supporting Shells. It was a nervy 0-0 draw. They just got over the line. The money was starting to come in Europe in those days. It was considered very important to get through, and Shells just about did it. 0-0 draw on Talca, and it set up a glamour tie against the Croatian champions Hajduk Split, and what a tie that was. Now, realistically, that was the end of the road. I mean, in 2004 and today, you're drawing a crack Croatian side. Glenn Fitzpatrick scored an early goal for Shells, shot goal and Split. They were 3-1 down going into the last couple of minutes, and that man Alan Moore again popped up to make it 3-2, which was a fantastic result. To go to Croatia and only lose 3-2, what a result. It set up the second leg in Talca Park, a totally sold out Talca Park, which held a lot more than it does today. I think there were 8,000 or 9,000 seats in those days, and it was packed to the rafters. Huge night. For me, I was there. I can remember the atmosphere, roaring Shells on. There were actually lots of neutral LOI fans there to support Shells. It was a bit more common in those days. I know there's a lot of Pats and Bose fans and maybe Rovers fans taking delight in Shells losing to Rijeka. But back in those days, it was maybe a little bit more support. And Shells got the tactics absolutely spot on. Kept it very tight. 0-0. They had the two away goals route. Obviously, they were going out at 0-0. 12 minutes to go, David Rogers, 25 yards, an absolute screamer. Shells one up, and suddenly they were ahead on the away goals rule, and Talca Park went absolutely nuts. And there was a flurry from Hadrick Split, but in the 93rd minute, Alan Moore again scored in every round. He got the goal to make it absolutely safe and a 2-0 win. And arguably, I think one of the greatest, if not the greatest win ever for an Irish side in Europe. And what a performance and what a result. And that set up a glamour tie against Deportivo La Coruña, who have they've fallen down from where they were 21 years ago, but they'd been Champions League semi-finalists. They were a top Champions League team at the time. And again, Shells, they drew. Obviously, they had to move this to Lansdowne Road. They couldn't play them in Talca Park. They drew 0-0 in Lansdowne Road. What a performance. And it was 0-0 in La Coruña for almost an hour before Deportivo finally got the breakthrough and eventually won 3-0. But even at 1-0 down, Jason Byrne had a great chance. Flash went just wide. So who knows what might have been and everything. But a brilliant campaign for Shelbourne. They did drop into the Europa League, but maybe that's for another podcast. But what a UEFA Cup as it was then. What a run by Shelbourne, and what a performance in particular to beat Hadrick Split.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that I remember that Deportivo team was a really good team. They were Champions League regulars for quite a while in the early 2000s as well. Really, really great team. So like to go there and you know, put on a fine performance is no mean thing for an Irish team.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it was, and then to draw 0-0 with them in Dublin was quite an achievement as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they were, people may not realize it now, but it's probably the equivalent of drawing 0-0 with an Atletico Madrid or somebody like that, or a Sevilla, you know, that's they were a top Spanish side.
Yeah, yeah, regularly in the top four in Spain at the time as well. So fantastic achievement. Last one on the list for this look at European football for League of Ireland clubs. You've got Dundalk in 2016. This might be a little fresher in the memory for League of Ireland and Dundalk fans as well. But tell us a little bit more about this.
Yeah, so this is probably the other one that's in the argument. A great run by Dundalk, and I suppose you're getting back to 9 years ago, how much of this is history and everything. But in 2016, Dundalk as champions, well, they started off drawing FH of Iceland. It would have been expected to get through, like Shells against Icelandic opposition, but it was going to be a very tough tie. David McMillan gave them the lead midway through the second half in Oriel Park. But unfortunately, the Icelandic champions equalised with 13 minutes to go. And 1-1 at home was seen as being a very disappointing result and setting up a very tough tie away to FH in Iceland. And Dundalk went a goal down early on, so they looked in real trouble. But that man, Dave McMillan, again, he scored twice early in the second half. And even though Dundalk conceded a late equaliser, they were still through on the away goals rule. So 2-2 in Harnafrajor. I probably murdered that pronunciation, but it was enough for Dundalk to knock out FH on the away goals rule. And they drew that team, Bate Borisov, again. Now, Bate had put Dundalk out. They had become, I think in fairness, other boys beat them back in the day. They had become a much bigger club. They had a lot more investment. And they were really considered to be a level above Dundalk at this stage, the Belarusian champions.
I do remember that they were kind of more regular European football as well for them.
They were. I think they'd beaten 1860 Munich, I think, home and away. They'd got some decent results, and they were regulars in European football. They'd reached group stage and everything. So Dundalk lost 1-0 in Borisov, which is a very respectable result. Brought them back to Tala, and on an incredible night, the famous night that Matt David McMillan scored just before half time. He scored again just before the hour mark, and Dundalk were suddenly 2-0 up and ahead. Now Bath, they threw the kitchen sink at them. One goal would have been enough to put them through on away goals, but Robbie Benson made it safe with a 98 minute goal, and a 3-0 win for Dundalk to beat Bath Borisov 3-0 was quite an achievement, and certainly Dundalk's greatest ever night in Europe. And again, it's one that's in the argument for the greatest nights for a League of Ireland club. But I mean, you have to go into nights like Shamrock Rovers in Belgrade as well, and all sorts of. There's been many great nights for Irish sides, but this is one that's certainly in the argument. And we'll only stay in the Champions League because obviously Dundalk dropped to the Europa League after this. But they had Legia Warsaw in Dublin, and Legia came to Dublin and won 2-0 at Lansdowne Road. But even in Warsaw, Dundalk gave them quite a fright. Robbie Benson put them a goal up, and they're missing the second goal that could have brought extra time and possibly penalties. But a 92nd minute equaliser from Legia made it 1-1 on the night, and they went through to the group stages of the Champions League, and Dundalk dropped to the Europa League.
Yeah, and it's not often in, I suppose, the history of League of Ireland teams in Europe that you see a big win, you know, a 3-0 or a 4-0, you know, giving a team a good run in a home tie as well. So it was great to be able to see that, and I suppose in the end it was comfortable, but it was a fantastic result for them, and I think one that's kind of rightly resonated through the clubs even up to now.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it was it was an incredible shot, but as you said, 3-0 is comprehensive, and what a win, what a result, and
it was a first group stage.
It guaranteed a first group stage for Dundalk as well. So
yeah, absolutely fantastic. What a trip down memory lane for those European ties. And I suppose as well, if we kind of look at it, I suppose to touch on it, I suppose the modern setup for European football, you know, as we're recording this, we've come off the back of a couple of weeks, a month or so of European football for League of Ireland sides. The modern setup for it, I think, has really improved, has really helped League of Ireland teams, because if you don't get one, you can kind of drop down to the other. If you don't get that, you can drop down to the next one. And it really kind of gives those, I suppose, lower teams across Europe that opportunity to number one, play in Europe, but actually also get the financial reward for playing in Europe.
Yeah, I think the addition of the Conference League in recent years has certainly helped, as you say, because I think, look, St. Pat's, as speak Shamrock Rovers and St. Pat's are still in Europe. I think St. Pat's have an absolute mountain to climb in Istanbul. Hopefully Shamrock Rovers can turn it around against Balkany. But even if they do, Shamrock Rovers to reach the group phase of the Conference League phase is probably a bridge too far against the likes of Santa Clara. But our champions every year, particularly if they can win the first game, have an incredible chance, as Shelburne still do, of reaching league stage football. Because if you go through a round in the Champions League, then you drop to the Europa League, as Shells did against Rijeka. And then if you lose, then you drop to the Conference League. And in all these cases, if you can win your first Champions League game, you're then one more win away from league phase football. So even though Shells were beaten by Karabag, even though they tragically lost to Rijeka after an incredible win away, they still have a chance against either Linfield or the Faroese champions of getting league stage football. And that's, it's great for all the smaller leagues like our own that clubs can get the chance to play in the league phase. I mean, last year you had Larne from Northern Ireland, you had TNS from Wales, you've had the likes of, in recent years, Lincoln Red Imps from Gibraltar. Oh, the likes of Larne, that Lincoln Red Imps, TNS, all got to play in group stage football. And a lot of the smaller leagues have had, in nearly all cases, it is their champions. They actually get to play league phase football. And which, I mean, I think it's over 40 leagues in Europe now at some stage have had one of their teams play in the group stage and league phase. And I mean, we had it first with Shamrock Rovers, was it back in 2011? We had Dundalk in 2016, Dundalk again in 2020, and Rovers, of course, recently a couple of times, and Rovers getting past the league phase and reaching the knockout phase. The first time ever for a League of Ireland club to play European football after Christmas. So we've so some fantastic achievements. And I think it has been great that the new Conference League allows a lot of clubs from smaller leagues to make that breakthrough. Still hoping Rovers, maybe Pats can for a miracle, but Shells are the one with a real chance as we talk about getting through to the league phase this year. And that would be historic for them, the first time for Shelbourne to become the third League of Ireland club to play group stage or league phase football.
I think what's also good as well is that it gets teams used to playing regularly on a Tuesday and Wednesday night for European football, which I think is really, really important. It's a hard thing to get used to doing, you know, going back to, I suppose, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, etc. You don't have that kind of regularity to play European football. It's one and done if you get knocked out and that's that, you know, and so on. Whereas now, that regularly playing European football on a Tuesday or Wednesday night or Thursday night is really good for Irish football to get used to that European mentality and then have to play games then on your Saturday or your Sunday because of where you've played during the week, etc. It's a good thing to get used to, I think, for European football.
Yeah, no, it does take its toll. Now, I know Stephen Bradley was making the point that maybe you need a bigger squad, and he does have a really good squad, but his Shamrock Rovers team have had to play Thursday, Sunday consistently, and they are working through it. I do like to see the clubs being supported and maybe, if possible, cancel a league game here and there. But maybe Rovers got a little bit lucky with the cup draws as well, that they were maybe able not to play the full team. But it can, as you say, it's quite demanding, and it's a big change. Instead of playing once a week, you're playing twice a week. And it does take its toll on players and trying to do it week in, week out. But we do have bigger squads. We do have full-time football now for our bigger clubs. So hopefully they can rise to the challenge, embrace it, and hopefully keep continuing to progress.
Absolutely, yeah. I know from obviously the Premier League year, early Premier League years, it took time for English clubs to get used to that kind of format and get used to kind of playing on that Wednesday night or the Tuesday night and having to play then on the Saturday or Sunday, etc. as well. So it took many, many years for that to kind of formulate and become a regular thing. But it's a great argument to have. It's a great thing to talk about. And I'm sure we'll be back to this topic again as the kind of comments roll in and tell us about all the games that we didn't talk about along the way. But some fantastic results in there, some fantastic games, high profile games as well. As ever, Gary, your knowledge, your understanding of the game from all those years is brilliant to have, and it's been great to talk about those great European ties. And yeah, thanks very much again.
Cheers.
Well, that's it for this week's podcast. If you have a famous European Cup night for your team, let us know in the comments. In future episodes, we'll be coming back to Europe again and talk about the Europa UEFA League football for our League of Ireland clubs as well. Don't forget to share the show on your social media channels to let people find out more about the history and heritage of Irish football. Turn on notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so that you can get notified straight away when a new episode drops. And remember to support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League club. It's our heritage. It's our game. Bye for now.